Well, we're continuing on in our study of Abraham, what his various adventures with God in particular, do for us. And we've been trying to, of course, interpret the Old Testament through the eyes of the New Testament so that we have a sure word and don't have to speculate about a lot of different things. I wanted to start this morning by first looking at what the book of Hebrews says about the passage we're going to read in Genesis. Because I think it sets the stage very well. In fact, it's quite interesting what the writer of the Hebrews says to us, and then to go back and see what it really means by reading the true events that took place. And I think you'll see where this goes. At least this has been meaningful to me, hopefully will be to you. In Hebrews 11, we have this list of what we've called the kind of hall of fame, the Faith Hall of Fame, the various list of different ones whom God gave to us as examples of faith. And we've read some of what he said about Abraham before. We haven't read it all because we weren't yet at the right place to read that. But now we're ready to read it. And I particularly want to pick up, let's pick up at verse 8 because it keeps it in context, and we'll read down to verse 12. It says, by faith, Abraham, having been called, obeyed to go out of the place, to go out unto the place which he was about to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he's going. By faith, he sojourned, kind of means he rented, or kind of lived temporarily, in the land of the promise as a foreigner, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, who were joint heirs of the same promise. For he awaited the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Now, verse 11 is particularly what we want to pay attention to. By faith, Sarah herself, being without child, being barren, received power to conceive and passed the time of fertility, since she was considered faithful, since she considered faithful the one who had promised, on account of which also from one, and this of one who was dead, as the stars of the heavens in number, and the sands which are by the seashore are innumerable. Now, that's a little awkward the way I read it. I read that quite literally as the Greek lays it down. What you say, what that verse 12 says, is that from this one were born those whose number was as the stars of the heavens and innumerable as the sands of the sea. And of course, out of Sarah. Well, what's interesting here, of course, when you read this in Hebrews, what tends to, if you ask, well, what was the condition that God came to Sarah and empowered Sarah to give birth, even though she was way too old to give birth? Well, we would read this. He says there in verse 11, it was since she considered faithful the one who had promised, that which was, the one who had promised. Well, And that's interesting, because I think it's real easy to say, okay, well, yeah, that was. It's easy to say, well, it's because of her faith, her trust, her confidence in God, that God was able to do this. And it's real easy for us to think that. But in reality, we need to understand how that faith showed itself, what it really looked like. Because I think what happens and what is usually the process that goes on in our own heads is we'll establish conditions, we'll establish expectations for ourselves and particularly for our own faith, for our own righteousness, that are pretty tough for us to meet. And so if we want to see what the Scripture says this faith of hers looked like. So if we go back to Genesis, let's look at the story. Well, in chapter 18, and we have Abraham, he's there. Remember, he's kind of today we all might call him a Bedouin. You know, he's kind of a guy who's living in tents. He's got his group of people. There's probably 1,000 of them kind of around him, at least 1,000, in this kind of settlement that was portable. You know, they'd move around probably thousands of head of livestock. So he's there. It says, the Lord appeared to him being Abraham. We can call him Abraham now because God changed his name, remember, last week. Anyway, the Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre while he was sitting at the tent door in the heat of the day. Hot day, he's there, he's sitting in his tent, you know, drinking a glass of lemonade, probably. You know. All right, maybe his iced tea, who knows. Sitting in a lawn chair, just kicking back. And when he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth. This guy is 99 years old. Don't forget this, right? I mean, and apparently he's in good health. I mean, you live that Bedouin life and you sit by the door of your tent drinking iced tea and you can live a long life. Now, he was obviously pretty healthy. Gets up, he runs. Well, why did he do this? Well, he said, my Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass your servant by. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a piece of bread that you may refresh yourselves and that you may go on since you have visited your servant. And they said, so do as you have said. Abram recognizes that one of these three people is the Lord himself. The Lord himself. And this is heavy. I don't know how he recognized him. I mean, remember once before, those of you who were here, we had talked about Abram encountering Melchizedek on the way back from having conquered the kings who had captured Lot, and in fact, actually the whole town of Sodom. And on his way back from conquering these kings and taking the spoils of the war, he had run into this other king, Melchizedek, who was the king of Salem, possibly the king of Jerusalem. Nobody really knows who it was. And we talked about that Melchizedek, who kind of came out of nowhere. Nobody knew where he was from. But Abram recognized that this is somebody pretty special. In fact, he tithed to him, acknowledging that there was somebody far greater than Abram or Abraham in this whole area. And then we looked at the symbolism of that whole act, which God used to help us understand that the relationship with Jesus Christ, this is an aside here, but it's probably important, that the relationship with Jesus Christ far exceeds any of the old law-based religions, particularly even Judaism itself, that relationship with Christ was everything. It's interesting how they did that. Well, there's some who have felt that maybe Melchizedek was an appearance of Christ, which would be any time God puts himself in human form, one could say that was an appearance of Christ. Well, in this case, he can tell. Now, I don't know what this guy looked like. I mean, there must have been something. Abraham knew that this was the Lord himself. And when he ran to him, and he sees these guys there, they're kind of out of the blue, and I don't know if the two guys with him had wings or what was going on, but I doubt it. But he ran to him, and he fell on his face, prostrate before him, and then said these things, "Please let me serve you." Well, this is a pretty remarkable event. If you look at the book of Ezekiel and see what Ezekiel sees when God comes on the scene, when he sees God. In fact, let me just read a couple pieces of it. It's actually the same thing. It's quite clearly a very similar image to what John saw on the Isle of Patmos when he was then given the charter to write the book of Revelation. Let's see. It says here, chapter 1 of Ezekiel, "I looked, behold, a storm wind was coming from the north, and a great cloud with fire flashing forth continually." And just try to visualize this, just for a moment. Just try to visualize this as we read it. Don't try to understand what it all means. Just try to see what Ezekiel actually saw in your mind's eye. If you've got to close your eyes, do it, but just think about this. So you see, the storm wind was coming from the north, a great cloud with fire flashing forth continually, and a bright light around it. And in the midst, something like glowing metal in the midst of the fire. And within it there were figures resembling four living creatures. And this was their appearance. They had a human form, and each of them had four faces and four wings. And their legs were straight, and their feet were like calf's hoof. And they gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings on the four sides were human hands. As for the faces and the wings of the four of them, their wings touched one another. Their faces did not turn when they moved. Each went straight forward. As for the form of their faces, each had the face of a man. All four had the face of a lion on the right and the face of a bull on the left, and the four had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. Their wings were spread out above. Each had two touching another being, and two covering their bodies, and each went straight forward wherever the Spirit was about to go, so they would go. And in the midst of the living beings, there was something that looked like burning coals of fire, like torches darting back and forth among the living beings. The fire was bright, and lightning was flashing from the fire, and the living beings ran to and fro like bolts of lightning. And now as I looked at the living beings, behold, there was one wheel on the earth beside the living beings, and each of the four of them. And then he goes on, he says, now over the heads of the living beings, there is something like an expanse, like the awesome gleam of crystal extending over their heads. And under the expanse, their wings stretched out straight towards one another. I heard the sound of their wings as the sound of abundant waters, like as they went, like the voice of the Almighty, a sound of tumult, like the sound of an army camp. Whenever they stood still, they dropped their wings. Okay, then he goes on and talks a little bit more about it. Let me read this last couple of verses. Now above the expanse that was over their heads, there was something resembling a throne, like lapis lazuli in appearance, and on that which resembled a throne, high up was a figure with the appearance of a man. And then I noticed from the appearance of his loins and upwards something like glowing metal that looked like fire all around within it. And from the appearance of his loins and downward, I saw something like fire, and there was radiance around him. As the appearance of the rainbow and the clouds on a rainy day, so was the appearance of that surrounding radiance. Such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell on my face, and I heard a voice. Now, I don't expect anybody to really have been able to visualize that real clearly, right? I mean, but it certainly was something that was striking, right? I mean, it's something. I mean, Daniel saw a similar vision, and he was sick for 2 weeks. Couldn't handle it. I mean, it was just overwhelming. Ezekiel sees the same vision about three different times, if I recall correctly. The same vision. Well, why, what's the whole point of it? Well, there's a lot of symbolism there, and it's kind of interesting to go into. But what's more important is he knew this was God. This is not some... This is God. Well, I don't know what Abram saw this day here while he was sitting on his lounge... in his lounge chair, you know, with his glass of iced tea, and then sees these guys there, there's three people. Well, somehow he knew. I don't think he saw quite the... I don't think God appeared in such an overwhelming form. God had some other purposes to appear that way to Ezekiel. But whatever he, however he appeared, it was God. There was no question. So Abram runs to him. Now, the two guys with him, apparently angels, later on, those angels will be sent down to Sodom to rescue Lot as God is getting ready to destroy Sodom. And we'll be talk about that next week, but the Lord willing. So what happened? These guys come to him, and he's sitting there, and he feeds them. He goes and runs here and there. In fact, you read the text. He hurried to the tent to Sarah, and he said, "Make some quickly, prepare thee measures of fine flour, knead it, and make bread cakes." Abram also ran to the herd and took a tender and choice calf and gave it to a servant, and he hurried and prepared it. And you read on, and he's running here and there, you know, getting things all ready. This 99-year-old man, you know, he's making things ready because this is something special. They ate. He gives them all the stuff they eat. Now, that's interesting. God, you know, who appears to him in this form, and really it would be a form of the Christ, the Anointed One, there. And he eats. He eats. I mean, what a mundane act, you know? But it's so great. He eats. And the two angels with him, they eat too. You know, were they really angels or were they men that he had appointed? We don't have a clue who what they looked like, what was like. But they were regular human beings. They could converse. They could interact. They could just have a little fellowship there with Abraham. And then they said to him, "Where's Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "Well, behold, in the tent." And he said, "I will surely return to you at this time next year." How old is Sarah at this time? Some people... Who knows? No? Jeez. I haven't heard it yet. Yes, sir? 90. All right, that's good. Sarah's 90 years old. She's inside the tent listening to this stuff, right? I mean, who wouldn't be, right? And so she's there. She's listening. What's going on? I mean, whoa, I mean, Abram running around. He's going to have a heart attack. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old. Advanced in age, Sarah was past childbearing. I didn't read the rest of this. He said, "I will surely return to you at this time next year." Oh, I said this. "And behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." Now, Sarah's response, of course, verse 12, "And Sarah laughed to herself, saying, 'After I've become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?' The Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh, saying, "Shall I indeed bear a child when I am so old?" Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. He repeats it, kind of like read my lips, you know. Sarah denied it, however, saying, now, I didn't laugh. I don't know what she said. Oh, I was just clearing my throat, you know. Who, me? Now, that's interesting, by the way. What did we read a little earlier? Let's see. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 11, by faith also Sarah herself, being barren, received power of conception and passed the time of age, passed the time of childbearing, since she counted faithful the one who had promised. Or possibly that could be translated that which was promised. She just demonstrated this great faith here, right? You know, she says. I don't know exactly what she sounded like there, but Sarah laughed to herself and said, oh, I didn't laugh. She's saying this to God. I didn't laugh. So he repeats it. Then the men rose up from there and looked down towards Sodom, and Abram was walking with them to send them off, and now they have a little conversation about Sodom. Well, what a simple little story. What a simple little story. I mean, I love this story because Sarah's demonstration of faith was, you know, not exactly the kind that we would want to, you know, go down in history as having displayed, right? Yeah, I'm a real faithful. I believe everything God says. And therefore, He's rewarding me. Well, no. I mean, I think this is perfect. She laughs. Well, she just can't quite believe it. And then denies that she laughed. But God goes on and does what He's got to do. You know, there's more to the story. There's more to the story. Next year, she's going to have a son. But something else happens in the middle. Now, remember when they went to Egypt? Remember we talked about them going to Egypt? Sarah ended up in the harem, right? She's 65 years old, but apparently of real beauty. Then the harem, and who knows what happened there. Scripture isn't real specific, but Abram got rich when God told Pharaoh, "Wait a minute, this is not good here." And Pharaoh was pretty mad and ended up telling Abraham to get out of there, and then paid him basically to leave. Well, Abram apparently didn't learn a whole lot from that, or maybe he did. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he learned that it's a good way to get rich or what. But in the intervening time, he does it again. In chapter 20, we're going to skip a little bit on the whole issue of Sodom, and we'll come back to that. But chapter 20, we have Abram journeyed from there to the land of the Negev and settled between Kadesh and Shur. And he sojourned in Gerar. Gerar is just a little town, apparently, there. And the Negev was kind of the south area. And Abram said to Sarah, his wife, "She's my sister." So Abimelech, the king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. He took it. Here we go again, right? You know, not the kind of thing you want to hear from God, right? You're a dead man. Behold, he says, "Because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is married." Now Abimelech had not come near her. That was good. Remember, she's supposed to get, she's supposed to become fertile, right? I mean, she was barren, she's now become fertile. Abram and Sarah are getting ready to mess up this whole deal that God has established. Remember, God said, "I'm going to come to you this time next year, you're going to have a son. Well, okay, it takes 9 months for a child to get through the gestation period, right? So I mean, we're talking pretty short time. She had to get fertile here pretty quick. And so they're going down, and he lets her get taken by Abimelech. You know, it's, Abram, where's your head? Where's your head? What are you thinking? Well, fortunately, God intervened. God's not going to let it. God made his promise. We've got to remember that. God keeps his promises. And what's comforting to me in this story is he didn't let Abraham mess him up. Abraham kind of, and Sarah both kind of do a lot of stupid things. But God is in charge. Well, what happens? He comes to Abimelech. He says, "You're a dead man." Abimelech hadn't come near her. That was good. And he said, "Lord, will thou slay a nation even though blameless?" In other words, what did I do? Didn't he himself say to me, she's my sister? And she herself said, he's my brother? In the integrity of my heart, in the innocence of my hands, I've done this. In other words, I didn't know. I mean, Abimelech, I kind of like Abimelech. I mean, a good guy. These theories are good. I mean, I don't know if it was, you know, I don't know what he was like generally, but, you know, he does a good thing here. And God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that in the integrity of your heart you have done this, and I also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her." God came in. God intervened. "Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet." Now, I know what Abimelech said about that. Him? I don't know. "He's a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live." In other words, God had already put the curse of death on him. He says, "You're a dead man." He says, "Okay, look, through Abraham, he's going to pray for you. You're going to live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." In other words, I'm going to wipe you out totally. You're gone, erased from the earth. He had ample incentive to return Sarah. So Abimelech rose early in the morning. Now, I don't know how early it was, but it probably was real early. Early in the morning, and called all his servants and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were greatly frightened. And Abimelech called Abram, and he said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? What did I do to you, Abram? And look what you're doing." I suspect he was talking kind of fast then too, you know. Voice was getting a little high. I mean, he's got some animation here. "You have done to me," this is a great verse, listen to this, "You have done to me things that ought not to be done." Isn't that great? That's kind of the ultimate thing. You go say to your neighbor that. You've done me things that shouldn't be done. You know? He said, "Whoa, I'm scared." Abimelech said to Abraham, what have you encountered that you've done this thing? In other words, what happened to you? Actually, it's kind of an interesting psychological term. It's kind of like, what happened in your childhood, you know? Now, I don't know if that's exactly what he means by this, but it's just a weird thing. What have you encountered that you have done these things? In other words, what has happened to you that would make you do this? Where are you coming from? Why aren't you thinking? And Abram said, "Well, because I thought surely there's no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife." He didn't see the misconnection of this. Well, besides, she actually is my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came about when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, "This is the kindness which you will show to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he's my brother." So they made this deal long, long time ago. before he had any further knowledge of God, and he's just kind of hanging in there with this deal that they had made and lying everywhere they went. Well, it wasn't really a lie, was it? I mean, it was kind of a half-truth. But what was the purpose of the half-truth? To deceive the people so that they wouldn't kill him. They thought everywhere he'd go, they'd kill him because his wife was so beautiful. They'd kill him and take his wife. Okay, well, maybe that was a rational fear. But what wasn't rational is he had God on his side. He didn't have to do this. And in fact, he was on the verge of really causing some big problems. Big problems to himself, and had anything happened, that whole nation or that whole tribe was going to get wiped out by God. I mean, this is big stuff here. So look what it, now this is what's ironic. Abimelech then, remember what happened? Remember with Pharaoh? And the cover was blown and all these things happened and Abram was paid to go away, right? Same thing happens. Everywhere he goes, he makes a buck. Yeah. Abimelech then took sheep and oxen and male and female servants and gave them to Abraham and restored his wife Sarah to him. And Abimelech said, "Behold, my land is before you. Settle wherever you want." And to Sarah he said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, it is your vindication before all who are with you and before all men. You are cleared." Apparently he probably had taken her, maybe with a little violence. I kind of get the feeling that there might have been something a little more to the story. And Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed fast all the wombs of the household of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Interesting story. And then the Lord took note of Sarah, and he said, as he had said. And the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of the son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 years old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, "God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me." And she said, "Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age." And the child grew, and he was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But what we've just read is a description of real people in real faith. And it's not very impressive. It doesn't make you go, "Wow, aren't those people wonderful?" But it does make you say, "God is way beyond me. God's the one who kept his promise here." He does say that, yes, and here back in Hebrews, he says, "Since she considered faithful the one who had promised." Considered him faithful. Okay. Was it an impressive faith? Was it such a faith that one would want to talk about for generation after generation after generation of how wonderfully Sarah trusted God? Well, if we want to be real, yes. If we want to set expectations that none of us really measure up to, then we might want to say it also, but we'll change the story a little. The real story is clear. I mean, she's just a real person. And all of us are just real people. Abraham was a real person. He was weak. He cared about God, but he didn't really understand who God was. And he understood that God was to be revered, God was to be feared, God was to be respected. I mean, he ran down and fell before God, and that's appropriate response. If you recall last week, we talked about him falling before God and a couple other scenes. One place he laughed when God talked. He was kind of tickled by some things God was telling him, you know. Sarah laughed because she didn't believe it. Wait a minute. Oh, she was kind of laughing. It was apparently even in mockery. And of course, Isaac's name means she laughed. A vivid reminder to both Abraham and Sarah of what this whole thing's about. And they could have named him Son of the Promise, you know, or something. You know, the Great One, something. But it's laughter. And that's so great, really. So great. God is faithful. God is faithful. He protected Abraham. Abraham was doing one of the stupidest things he'd ever done in his life. When he tried to pull the same trick he had pulled on Pharaoh, on Abimelech, not even thinking about the implications of it. Of course, that's what we do, right? When we want to sin, we usually don't think about the implications. We'll kind of block them from our minds, or we'll just get blinded by our passions or blinded by whatever it is that we're thinking about for the next 30 seconds. We do the same thing. Abraham did it. We do it. That's human. That's what human beings do. Fortunately, our God is gracious. And our God is powerful. He made sure that we could never forget that He was the one who pulled this off. It was not Abraham and it was not Sarah. God pulled this off. You know, it's actually said quite well. It's interesting at the end of the story, of course, they talk about circumcising Isaac. Circumcision was the thing that we talked about last week as the symbol of God's relationship with the Hebrews. And would be the thing that they would do. That would be their part of the bargain. But as we read some weeks ago in Romans chapter 4, the entire chapter, it's recommended reading, by the way, if you get a chance, Romans chapter 4. The whole chapter is about Abraham and faith that's not quite the way it seems. Faith that doesn't, it's not quite what we think it ought to be. And he says that, you know, when, he says, remember one thing, that it was before that whole covenant that where Abraham had the promise to go on with the circumcision rite. It was before that God made all His promises. The promises were not dependent on that. It was God's deal. And the other was something that was part of God's plan for furthering and preserving those Hebrew people as a nation, long enough to produce the Christ and to do whatever other things God is planning to do with the nation of Israel. And that was part of it, yes. But that was after. The promise of God was before. And that's what Paul says in the book of Romans, that the faith that we now have, the relationship that we now have with Christ, is the pre-circumcision relationship. In other words, it doesn't require what we do. It requires the dependability of God. And that's okay. That works for us. In verse 18 of Romans 4, we'll close with this, it says, let me back up. He says, it's not, back at verse 13, for it's not through the law that the promise was to Abraham and to his seed. For him to be the heir of the world. But it was through the righteousness of faith. For if the heirs were of the law, their faith is empty. And if it's just a legal matter, where's faith? It's not faith, it's an agreement. So the faith, if it was by the law, the faith would be empty. And the promise would be kind of disempowered. Going on, verse 16. On account of this, it's by faith, so that according to grace, the promise would be confirmed to all the seed. Not to that which is of the law only, but to that which is by faith. Abraham, who is the father of all of us, just as it is written, I have placed you the father of many nations. Because he believed God, who makes alive the dead and calls the things which are not as things which are. There he's referring to Isaac particularly. Who, when there was no hope, now he's referring back to Abraham. When there's no hope, he believed upon the hope that he would be the father of many nations. According as it is written, so will be your seed. It says, kind of which it was accounted to him for righteousness. And is written, it is not written on account of him alone that it would be imputed to him, but on account of us who are about to be counted. We're about to be counted. We who believe upon the one who raised Jesus our Lord from the dead, who was delivered on account of our trespasses and was raised on account of our righteousness. Point is, Abraham's adventures, Abraham's weaknesses, Abraham's good and bad, we're representative. All of us are in the same boat. The bad part was the part that kind of was made it tough. Jesus died because that's our human nature. Our inclination is to do that, is to take things in our own hands, to try to build our own lives and do stupid things. And we believe, yeah, we believe, but it's so faltering. Well, Jesus knew that. He died for us. He was raised. Our access, our relationship to God is assured. The same God that kept the promise to Sarah in spite of all the things that they were doing to mess it up is the same promise God gives us to bring us through this life to eternity.